Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, everybody, let's hang tight and look for landing radar.
Flight guidance.
No guidance.
We'll need that landing radar by 18,000 with this soundtrack.
Roger.
On the pings.
Roger, I copy guidance. Okay, we got data back.
Radar flight looks good.
Roger.
2,000 feet.
Roger. 2,000 foot delta H. Goes based on the data you had prior to LOS. I see we got it back. Give you another few seconds.
We're going fine.
Okay, retro, go.
Fido,
go.
Guide,
go.
Control,
go.
Telcom,
go. GNC,
go.
Ecom,
go.
Surgeon,
go.
Capcom, we're go to continue PDI.
Coming to you live from the slopes of the ghost-filled Sierra Nevada gold country and in the paranormally active shadow of Mount Rainier, it's Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio with your hosts, John Almada and Kat Lang. Tonight on Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio, we have Gloria Young from Ghost Trackers is going to be our special guest at 8:30. We're also going to talk about the investigation at the Warner Grand Theater from last night, and I stayed up till about 2 in the morning, watched the whole thing, and even did a little bit of EVP recording from 400 miles away. Got a little bit of evidence to go through. And we will be doing that this week. Also, I took a little trip down to Bryant Cemetery down in La Trobe, California. That's only about a good 7 miles from me here. Spent 30 minutes at that cemetery and got some great EVPs. And found out that there's just a really nice bunch of spirits there. And when I went to leave, one of them said, "Don't forget to come back." And there's nothing better than that to kind of get a feel that you've got some good folks there if they want you back. So I make the promise here and now that I will make regular visits there and talk with them, bring a few EVPs back for the show. So we dedicate tonight's show to Ghost Trackers, Gloria Young, and, of course, the spirits of Bryant Cemetery in La Trobe. This is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio.
And it was an interesting day out there. Kat, are you with me?
I am. I am here. How are you today, my friend?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. I had an interesting time at that cemetery. I took the brand new digital recorder out just for a spin and got some interesting EVPs. And the thing is I've noticed, and maybe you've seen this, and I'll ask Gloria about this when she's on at 8:30. About signature EVPs, and what I mean by that is that there are sites when you go to them that you get EVPs that are in a style that are unique to that particular location. They're not just the same everywhere you go. And for example, at a place called Albert Shafsky House up in Placerville, we had EVPs that were always preceded by the sounds of poker chips or cards shuffling. Evidently a lot of gambling there. Other places have unique sounds and pops and clicks that are different by location, and they seem to repeat whenever you go back. In this case today, what I noted was that these particular spirits were not the kind that were real boisterous like a lot of other places around here. Very soft spoken, and they talked really, really low. So I had to amplify quite a bit, but I was the only person out there in the middle of this field, and there was no other person within 1,000 yards of me, and we got some pretty good stuff. So, but I was really touched at the end of it. I figured, well, I got about maybe 20 EVPs out of it, and it wasn't a lot for what
right.
we do. And at the very end, I said I'd be back in about a month, and this guy comes on and says, don't forget to come back. Yeah, and it was, I'm paraphrasing, but basically the forget word was very clear. Don't forget to come back. And so when I heard that, I kind of got all mushy. I went, oh, man. So, yes, we're going to go back there and spend some time probably towards the end of the month and maybe make a more of an investigation out of it.
I wish I could go.
Yeah, it's if you ever get down this way, that's the big thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean,
before my documentary goes out, I'd like to come down and do some stuff.
Yeah, why don't you repeat about that documentary of yours?
Well, I've been asked to, I can't give out any details, but I've been asked to participate in a documentary with my remote viewing skills, which have proved to be 99.9% of the time I'm just dead on with what I can do, and I had the right people that were listening to a couple of my shows, and they contacted me and asked me to do this TV spot, so I thought that would be pretty cool, so I'm off to the wild blue yonder. But I will tell you that the one thing that really matters to me is my family's very proud of me.
Well, we all are, and thanks for...
My mother told me that she was proud of me, and I started to cry, so don't get me going.
Okay, we won't, but I'll tell you what, I'm very glad for you. I always knew you had a documentary talent in you, so, we'll send you off with our blessings and, anxiously await the stories when you get back. So hopefully you'll be able to do it while you're on the road to pop on the show. So I don't know when this is going to happen, but... we support you all the way.
Yay.
Okay, yay.
You know, today is also an interesting day. I don't know if you know what today is. Today is the day that Charles Manson did killed those, the him and his crew killed Sharon Tate and those guys.
Oh, man.
Today's the anniversary.
There was news about that. Last year, there was news about that they were using cadaver dogs to go back down to... one of those desert places that they stayed down near Death Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
There had been, I don't know whatever came out of that, but evidently they had some pretty strong evidence of where the Manson family had done some of the murders there of other people that were not, prior to the Tate murders. So, yeah, that guy's definitely a space cadet. I've actually know somebody who used to do psychological profiles of Charles Manson. And he said being in the same room with that guy was an experience you would never forget because you always knew he was just off, really bad. And even to this day, the guy is just, of course, they tried to set him on fire there in Vacaville, so I wish they'd finished the job. But anyway, let's get into some of the other things going on. Well, back to Gloria Young, before we jump into the news, I'm going to read a little bio about Gloria. And it starts with basically her organization. Ghost Trackers are a professional research group with years of experience utilizing a diverse group of people, educating the public with regard to ghostly activity. And the organization is dedicated to research, investigation, and documentation of ghostly activity in the San Francisco Bay Area, Santa Clara County area, Northern California, and surrounding Western states. So she's got a pretty wide territory she covers. And I've seen her in action. I hunted with her in 2007 at the Brookdale Lodge, which has changed names now. I think it's the Brookdale Spa and Inn now. But nonetheless, a very haunted and old inn and lodge that there's rumored to be people buried in the floor, along with a little girl that haunts the brook room, or there's actually a brook that runs through the room. So
she was on she was on Ghost Adventures last night.
Oh, she was? I didn't see
they
that.
Did an old, they did an older ghost, the one with her on it, at the old hospital. Yeah, I was watching it last night, and I was like, Gloria!
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to ask about that. I'm glad you brought that up. I didn't realize she'd been on one of those, so I'm going to look for that when I get a chance. And so, but we'll ask her about what it's like to hunt with the boys. And, speaking of our last night's talk about the boys and the dark side, trying to take them over, but... we're going to be pulling for them. Maybe they know what they're doing, and we're just wrong, but I hope that's the case.
Was
anyway,
anything that I told you yesterday true? Did it come true?
On which subject? My brain just went south on me. I was just looking at the notes, and what do you mean?
When I was talking to you on the air last night, and I was telling you, you asked me what I saw, and I told you.
On
Sharon's investigation at the theater.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. There was actually a child that we had Sharon was talking about, and there was some interesting things that went on there. There were shadows seen throughout the building, and they were dealing with that. I did some EVP work, actually, remotely, right through the Internet. I set an audio track recording because people were saying they were hearing things. And so I've got about 2 hours of audio to analyze from that investigation. But Sharon was talking about a little boy spirit that is seen there, and that she's actually gotten pictures of this. And
yeah.
This kid is crawling on the ground, evidently younger, but there's also other child spirits there. And I guess an individual who sort of runs things there. So I'll have to pull together a kind of a go back and look at what happened there and then pull that
mm-hmm.
back and match that to your predictions, you know, point by point. But I've got that list actually in my alternate studio right now because that's where I worked out of. But
right.
overall, yeah, I think you were pretty close. You were pretty close. So, especially with the child thing, that's the thing that stood
mm-hmm.
out for me. So they did get some interesting K2 activity. Had tried some new techniques out, and then they were taking ideas from us as chat room participants, and it, you know, so we were able to, I had a few things that I asked them to do that they did, including telling the spirits there that they were moving in and taking over, and trying to get a reaction out of them. It was light provoking, but nothing happened. What I find is that the Warner Grand seems to have a very, very tolerant and nicely behaved ghosts, so I guess that's the only way you could say it, but really, I think Sharon did a bang-up job on that investigation with the guys from North Orange Paranormal Society. So I think it's going to be a regular thing. Again, as soon as they get the next one going, I'm going to hop in the Mustang and head down and join them for one of these investigations. So I got to give Sharon a call here in the coming week. Anyway, back with Gloria, I'm going to read just I'll paraphrase this kind of long paragraph. Talks a bit about her EVP experience, and I'm going to actually ask her more questions about how she got into all this, but in one of her lectures, she states, "I remember the first time I got my first EVP. I was ecstatic. I had gone to a local historical building at Halloween where I was to be a guest on a local radio show, and they were broadcasting the show from this building, and I had my tape recorder with me. I always have some sort of media with me to play back when I get home so I can listen to myself and make sure I don't sound like some idiot." I know the feeling. I set my recorder down on the table in front of me, and there were two show personalities to my right at the table and one tarot card reader giving readings on my left at the table. No one was ever near my recorder, and I never left the table. Following the radio show, I went home and listened to the taping, and while working on my computer, and much to my surprise, as I listened to the recording, I received a voice as clear as can be, sounding like an older woman telling me, "Get out," not in a nice way. I was amazed, and I had to call everyone I could get hold of to let them listen to it, and everybody was congratulating her. I always said that this historic building was not haunted, but I've been in it over the years and swore that it was not haunted. To my surprise, I got one of the best EVPs I've ever received and cherish it to this day. So it goes on here, but she's a very, very experienced paranormal researcher. Does some work with exotic devices, you know, radioactive ion counters and things like that. So I think we're going to hear some interesting things tonight about what she's doing now and things she's done in the past. That said, let's go ahead and dive into the paranormal news, and let's see what we got going on in the world today. We got out of the cronline.com, out of serving the greater Lewis County, Washington area since 1889.
That's it.
Yeah, this is Ghost Hunters Descend on the Twin Cities, and this is near your area, I take it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in a short, almost inaudible whisper on an otherwise clear recording, it's a short, almost inaudible whisper on an otherwise clear recording, but the Northwest Paranormal Investigation Agency owner, Bert Coates of King County, originally said it was proof of ghosts at the Olympic Club and Center in Centralia. Is that far from you?
No, it's about Centralia is about an hour from me. I know exactly where he's talking about too. That place, oh yeah, that place has some activity. Boy, I tell you.
Yeah, well, it says here that the audio was recorded in the wee hours of the morning during an investigation into paranormal activity in Lewis County's Lewis County on NWPIA's second trip to the Twin Cities in July. I'm sure it's a ghost, Coates said. We run through everything we possibly can to make sure it isn't something else. We're coming up with it being a ghost. I don't know what else it could be. As it turned out, a follow-up revealed the raspy voice to be that of one of the members of the team, and NWPIA has since confirmed no presence of ghosts or spirits other than the drinkable time at the Olympic Club, nor at the Pioneer Greenwood Cemetery where they met earlier the same night. Coates, age 42, said he's aware that some people, maybe most, will be skeptical of any finding, and a skeptic will always be a skeptic no matter what he says. Part of being a ghost hunter is to be a skeptic as well. And it's kind of good to see that these guys, that's the reason I included here this story, is it's good to see, you know, somebody go out and not catch something, and or catch something and then debunk it, you know, properly, and come out and you know, basically fess up even if they made a mistake. So that's the way it should be, and I tip my hat to these guys. And I don't know if you've ever run into them. Have you ever hung up with these guys?
No. If they're down there in Centralia by any of the McMinnville brothers buildings, the McMinnvilles are famous for buying haunted property, and so if he didn't catch anything, that's interesting. But along the same lines, like you say, you know, if you can be, I'd like rather debunk something than sit there and tell you that this is what we captured. So.
Yeah, I mean, I had a case where over at one of the cemeteries down near Ione that we hunted at in it was early December of last year. Thought I really caught a Class A. I mean, it was just dead on, unbelievable. Had all the signatures. Really believed what I was hearing was an EVP, and at the last minute, I decided to run a check with the team that I'd been with. It was a different group out of Sacramento. And when I did that, an embarrassing email came forward and said, well, that was me, because it was really a kind of a weird set of language that went on, and she was just playing out some internal thoughts, which I think we all have had happen. So I was glad that I didn't put something out there and label it as such, but even if that had happened, I would have backtracked it. So, but it's good to see other groups are, you know, ethical and doing the same kinds of things.
Uh-huh.
Let's jump into the world of the Observer. And I'm not sure where this is out of. Paranormal Convention Ready. This is out of, oh, it's actually a Canadian-American Paranormal Convention. First of its kind in Sarnia. It sounds like Sarnia.
Sarnia is where the conference is up there in Canada. That's where,
yeah.
Paracon is.
Yep. So they basically are talking. This is posted 10 hours ago. So I'm not sure what date this is at, but, here it is. It's, well, they don't say. Good Lord, these people put this thing out there and then they don't tell you. But anyway, auction, they're going to be, it's the first of its kind in Sarnia and features some of the biggest names in paranormal investigation. Auctions from movie props and paranormal memorabilia will be support the Breast Cancer Society of Canada and the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. Featured speakers include paranormal experts Keith Age, who I think you know, Shannon Sylvia, and Michael Esposito, who will offer insights for paranormal enthusiasts and those who've had close encounters of their own. I can't even say talking at close encounters of their own, none of the third kind. I don't have a date here, but... let's see, convention tickets are $72 in advance, $72, or $89 at the door. Tickets to the Lawrence House investigation are $25. That's not bad. And the VIP night is $40. Both must be purchased through Thomas's office at 519-337-8333. And this is the website is here, www.paracon2009.com. So if you're interested in going up to, you know, hang out with the Canadians and go, hey, you see a ghost, I tend to think that they'll be glad to see some Americans pop on up. Let's take the final story. This is from Cleveland in Northeast Ohio. This is Ohio researchers of Bandit Spirits, a paranormal research group, is investigating a legendary feline ghost in the Fairport Harbor Lighthouse. And I saw something about this on one of the paranormal shows last 2-3 weeks. Carlo Zuzik may be the project manager of what he describes as Ohio's foremost paranormal research group, but the Parma man says he does not really know that much about ghosts. It's really hard to know anything about them, he says, because we know there's something there, but we really can't explain it. And he's one of about 8 people who will conduct a half-day overnight investigation of the Fairport Harbor Lighthouse tonight to see if years-old rumors that the house is haunted by the spirit of a dead cat are true or just old wives' tales. And I tend to think it's true. They're going to use the standard issue here. They go through all the standard recorder stuff. And let me pop on up. Rumors of the ghost cat go back to at least 1999 when the former lighthouse curator Pamela Brent reported seeing and feeling a spirit-like feline. Then about 9 years ago, the mummified remains of a gray cat were found. They remain on display at the museum there. According to lore, a Captain Joseph Babcock lived in the lighthouse in the late 19th century and gave many cats to his bedridden wife before she passed away. And his son also died there of smallpox at the age of 5 and is believed to possibly inhabit the lighthouse, Zuzik says. So they're going to do this investigation, and this was actually, Saturday, August 1st, so they're going to do this investigation. They're probably getting ready now, so our best to all of them for that investigation and hope they catch something. But go out there and look for let me find this, Ohio... trying to find the name of the group. Ohio's foremost paranormal research groups, Carlo Zuzik. So if you can find that, Ohio researchers of banded spirits or orbs.
I
That's
know.
It. Orbs. I like that. That's good. Okay. So that's it for the news today, and we're going to be getting ready to have Gloria call in. We're also going to announce the call-in line, because I'm sure some of you may want to give Gloria a call when she gets on with us. Phone number for the chat room is going to be, not the chat room, but the chat line is 646. Boy, I'm having trouble talking today. 646-478-0377. And plenty of lines open, so just get ready about 8:30 when we have Gloria on. Anyway, yeah, Kat, I'll tell you what, that was last night, that was something. I really thought that the guys down there at NOPS and also for Journey Paranormal, they did a great job on that investigation. They were all over the place, and things were happening quite a bit on that investigation. I'm not sure if they taped it and people could go play it back yet. I didn't get a chance to go out and call Sharon to talk with her, but I'm sure she's overwhelmed with evidence right now. So,
there's a rebroadcast that started at 8 o'clock.
Oh, they're doing it now?
Yeah, it's today.
Okay, well, I'm sure that probably we'll see a kind of an on-demand copy of it, too, out there so that people will be able to play it. But I have to give the NOPS guys credit because they did a heck of a job there, you know, producing something of that scope with that many cameras and angles and all the attendant troubles, you know, that you're going to have, which they had. They started off 8, and I'm glad they did because I was still getting queued up and things set when I went back, you know, back to my second studio. So it turned out really well, and I'm just pleased to even be part of it, so... I recommend highly to anybody that does get down to the Southern California area, get a hold of Sharon Coyle at Journey Paranormal and see when the next hunts are going to be there. And she gets all over the place. Matter of fact, we're trying to arrange kind of a meeting of the three kings and queens, as we're calling ourselves right now, three different paranormal research groups, you know, our GRI here in Northern California, Journey down in Southern California, and one of our friends, Maury, and I can't remember what the name of her group is. Matter of fact, she hasn't told me that yet, so I think she's representing herself and starting a group, but she could probably kill me if I'm wrong. But she's out of Las Vegas, so we're going to have some sort of plan for a fall get-together somewhere in the middle where we all travel equal mileage and find some haunted locale. And I'll even probably do a radio show right out of wherever we're at, and maybe, who knows, a live broadcast may ensue. So that's coming up. But again, we're coming up. We burned a little time there. And why don't we see who's in the chat room, Kat, and make a call out on that?
We have Mr. Brian, a guest, 2868, Infinite Love, Sunshine 20, and yours truly.
Okay, and I'm sitting here drinking water. So let's go ahead and take a moment to go find some music to play. I'm going to move the mic so I can get closer to the broadcast computer. And I think you're going to like this one, Kat. We're going to play a couple of songs back to back, but I found something that I think you're going to get a kick out of. So we'll play a couple. I'll start with this one. Ghosts in White Linen.
Okay.
Ghosts in white linen, never touching the ground.
Oh my God.
Kids ringing doorbells, making their rounds. Ran out of Snickers, I don't have any more. A pack of Bart Simpsons threw eggs at my door. If I catch you, I'm gonna get you.
Try another one. I can't remember the order I had these loaded, so let's try song number two.
Oh my.
I might stop it.
Hello.
Who you gonna call?
Yeah, I think you better call.
afraid of no ghost.
Troops is filmed on location with the men of the Imperial Forces. All suspects are guilty, period. Otherwise, they wouldn't be suspect, would they?
This is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio, coming to you live on blogtalkradio.com.
Okay, and we are back, and our special guest tonight is Gloria Young. I believe we have intercepted the intrepid Gloria Young. She is called in. Hello, Gloria.
I'm here. How are you?
Hey, good to hear you again. I remember hunting with you in the Brookdale Lodge in 2007.
Wow, that was ages ago.
Yeah, it was. Back when I was just, only had a couple of pieces of equipment and was wide-eyed and looking at all you guys going, wow, how do you do this stuff? And been a blizzard of things ever since, but have seen you on TV. Kat rightly brought up the Ghost Adventures crew investigation that you were present at, and I own.
Yeah.
And I totally forgot about that, and I remembered, oh, that was that episode, yeah. And so we just, first off, greetings and thank you for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay, and why don't we just start off with how did you get into the paranormal, and where you're at today? Let's just dive in from the beginning.
Wow, that could take zillions of years. So I'll just, suffice it to say that I wish I had something really snappy to say, but I don't. We just started out as a group years ago, running through a cemetery, throwing water balloons at each other. And somewhere along the line, somebody got a really interesting idea that we should go further with this, and it evolved into who and what we are today. So it's taken almost 20 years to bring us to this point where we're comfortable and people know us and we're very established, and everything's good.
Yeah, you were throwing water balloons at each other.
Well, in those days you could easily get into a cemetery where now many have put gates up and that type of thing to keep out people, and vandals and that sort of thing. But yes, that's exactly what we were doing. We were throwing water balloons at each other and running through and doing what people do, saying boo and just giggling at the top of our lungs and just having a great old time. We weren't doing it through the tombstones or anything. We were running on the paths, but we were throwing water balloons at each other.
And I take it that one of you had an encounter of some sort, and things have progressed from there.
Believe it or not, that's a no. We were just having a grand old time, and the way that it evolved into, maybe we should do this as a group, was somebody had brought up the question after we had done this for two or three weekends. I wonder if there's anybody, in here that's like a ghost, or anybody ever has seen a ghost. And that was the question of the day. And from there, we kind of said, hey, let's kind of do this. In those, in those days, it wasn't a group. It was a club. We were a club. And over the years, everybody's since gone their way. Doing whatever they're doing, having a family or, working at their job, which requires a lot of time or whatever. And I stuck it out and got myself this really great crew that we have and been going that full force ever since.
And so you were doing this before it was fashionable to be in the paranormal. You just sort of found your way and just fell into it. And then you've become this, one of the pioneers, if you will, of what we do. Then, how did you first, investigate? What were your first techniques and the kinds of things that you, worked with and results that you got? Let's start with that.
Well, again, I wish I had something really, really great to say, but it was all about flashlights. And in those days, we would set up wind chimes and in a door jam, so that if wind came by, they would let us know that somebody was there. We would put baby powder on the floor to see if we got any footsteps. What else? There were just little, very simple homemade techniques like that that we would use. And it's funny to think about it now, but it was a big deal back then. So.
And you got results, I take it, though, if you did those kinds of things.
Well, it was always good to hear the wind chimes. Again, just like people these days, we went with a lot of feeling, wow, it feels funny here, or, you know, we would actually do the, you know, dude run thing and really get scared and that type of thing. It was difficult back then because we didn't have the nerve, I guess, if, you know, like we do now, nowadays, where we know that there really isn't any way to get hurt unless you fall and trip on your shoelaces or fall through a board in the floor or something like that. Nobody that I've ever been with has ever been injured or hurt by anything that's in somewhere. But it's in those days, it was enough to just scare the pants off you and you went running.
Well,
it was more fun then.
I think you know what, I remember when I hunted with you, though, you look like you were having a good time. You know, and obviously you still enjoy it.
Oh, absolutely. It's just such a blast. And the more that you do it, I hate to say the better you get, but the better you get, the more you're observant, the more you can listen, the more that, you know, things kind of, not follow you, but follow you as they kind of know that you're there and that you're friendly and that type of thing. And it's so much fun. I live and breathe this stuff, and that's why it's my full-time job.
Boy, you got it lucky. I mean, I have to go to a day job, but
I'm only
a few years away from retirement, and when I'm done, you're going to see me out there. I'm going to be doing it just like you're doing. So, but I'm just amazed at how long you've been at it. You obviously have established quite an organization, and can you tell us a little bit about Ghost Trackers and how they operate and what you do and where you go with them and go from there?
Well, Ghost Trackers, again, has been a group since 1992. After doing the cemetery thing, somebody, like I said, had this great idea. We should really kind of find out if there's really ghosts out there. And from there, I read every book that there was, which there weren't very many in those days. There were just a few authors, and they were just basically stories. I read everything there was to get my hands on, and even now, everything that comes out, you know, we're right there with it. And I started talking to other people. The internet was very, very new. I got to know Richard Sennett. I got to know a few other people via the internet and seeing what they were doing and how they were doing it. And over the course of time, we helped to develop standards and protocols that a lot of ghost hunters are using these days, which I'm very happy about. Nobody can claim it as theirs because it was a collaborative effort on everybody's part. But as I said, over the years, we've had a lot of people come, a lot of people go, for various reasons. And now we have a core group of seven. We have more that I could call on, but we have a core group of seven, and they are just so excellent. They're wonderful people. They're mainstream. They're right on top of the new stuff. We test all of the new equipment that comes out every time we get a chance. And they're just excellent. It wouldn't be a group effort without them. So, you know, I may be here on the radio, but they're behind me 100%, and I totally depend on them as well.
You know, I often see you with really exotic equipment. I remember one show, and I can't remember I know it was at the Brookdale, and you had a very advanced ion detection system, and you were talking about that with the show host. And I've seen you in other things where, you know, same kind of thing. You're always trying something new. So you basically, it just looks to me like you really are embracing the whole research role, you know, and carrying the science forward.
Well, ghost hunting can be done very simply with a flashlight, a camera, and an audio recorder. But if you throw in there some of these other things, you know, then they're tools for you to use. They're tools to help you detect what's there, for you to help hear what's there, for you to learn to use, and they can recognize it, and you can recognize it. And that's what they are. They're all tools. And but basically, it's you that has to learn what is and what isn't and how to use these things and, you know, what's the right way, what's the wrong way. And some of these things are good to use. Some of these things are not good to use. And that's what comes with playing with them, you know. Using them in a real, you know, real-time setting is very important. Just as at the Brookdale Lodge, that was one of our very first, most intricate pieces of equipment. And we were very proud of that thing. And it's a nothing now, but it was great back then, you know. And everybody's making such great strides in putting together different pieces of equipment. You have things like what, you know, they use on Ghost Adventures, but it's only one piece. And there are no others, you know, but people are trying. They're trying to duplicate them. They're trying to make different, you know, make them different in many ways. And all of these things are all tools that everybody can either purchase or borrow or, you know, whatever they do. Yes, we do have a thermal imaging camera that's, you know, very, very expensive. But some of these other very simple techniques, I wouldn't trade them for the world because they're very simple and they're very easy and that's what it takes. You know, it doesn't take much more than that.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I've been at it, you know, about 4 years now, and I've found that if I bring too much technology, I get lost in that, and the investigation tends to go by the wayside, so I have to plan out. When I bring an advanced piece of gear in, I tend to plan it out, and I have a particular role for that tool, you know, a mission in mind, and it doesn't always work out, but I've kind of learned not to carry the entire damn moon with me when I go out there, you know. I mean, I hear what you're saying. It's just, but, you know, you've been at the forefront for a long time, and it sounds like your group gets first crack at a lot of these new things, or you're really tied in with, you know, a lot of the folks that are you know, developing these things.
Well, we make it our point to be there. If not me, then some of our other members. We have two gals that are our camera crew, if you will, and they know everything about all of the new equipment. They're right up there with the best stuff, and what they don't get, I get, and we trade back and forth, or, you know, I use mine and they use theirs or whatever. And that's what's important. Nobody's going to gain anything if we don't try to use these things. And using them on a very limited basis sometimes just doesn't work. When you have the ability to be in some place for longer than one or two times, you know, you can try and see what's what.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, it's just, hi, who's that?
Well, that's Kat. Yeah, she's our co-host. I'm sorry, I didn't do the introduction.
No,
Kat?
That's okay. Anyway, it is important to have the good stuff, you know, with you as much as you can gather. Some of this stuff is way in outer space as far as price, but some of the stuff is just very simple, and that's why I say I tend to lean towards the simple and the easy, because it doesn't require me carrying, you know, 20 packs on my back just to get to, you know, what I want to do, so...
I know the feeling. I carry a kind of a go pack with me everywhere, and always though in my pocket is an audio recorder, because
right.
I never know what's going to happen. And oddly enough, I got at my workplace, I got called in by our guards who clued me in that we had a haunt going on in the building. And sure enough, you know, we got just amazing EVPs just off, you know, an impromptu investigation off the cuff. So. I'm glad, you know, I'm glad we can get results with simple things. And these little digital audio recorders are just a miracle. You know, you just have them in your pocket, pull it out, and you're in business, you know. But
and we found that you can get little, like the iPods have those little things that you can wear around your neck, or Case Logic comes out with a really nice one that's waterproof. And it's basically something that just goes over your neck, and it has the little case right there, and you can stick your audio recorder in there and just let it run. And I found, you know, a lot of times that you just, by walking through a place, you can get, you know, EVP. Because all of a sudden there's an additional voice, and you're going, well, who the heck is that, you know? And
yeah. So
I just let mine run.
That's what I do. I've run into different philosophies with different, you know, folks that, you know, are established, you know, long-term EVP researcher types. But, you know, I agree with you in that technique. I know it takes a long time to analyze the evidence, but that's how you're going to get stuff.
That's right.
You know, some folks go with kind of short chopped, you know, recording methods, but I throw two and three recorders down, and you know, I'll do a couple of static recorders and leave them off in a place I think, you know, I've researched and found, okay, that's going to be a great spot that's had results before, or we're just fishing. We're going to see what we're going to get, and more often than not, we get something. But
recorders are easy. You know, recorders are easy because they're relatively cheap, and you can you know, set them up all over the place. Yes, you do have to go back and listen, but you know, if you that's nothing compared to what you might actually capture if you know, if you just lay them down there. So yeah, that's what I do. You know, I allow my equipment to work for me.
Yeah, and that's the only problem is when you put all that down, and for every one of those that you run for all the length of time, that's the time you have to spend analyzing. And oh my God, and trying to find people
that's
to do
true.
The analysis with you is like you know, they all disappear suddenly. It's I've never figured that out yet.
It's all about delegation.
Yeah, and I'm learning that really quick. Now. With regard to the places you've hunted, what are some of the more memorable places you've been and cases that you can you know, tell our audience about?
Wow, that's a toughie. Where do I go back? Going to Tombstone, where we actually made our first documentary, we were in the birdcage before the birdcage was the ghost hunters and the ghost adventures people and everybody else. We were in there before anybody else. We were asked by Mr. Hunley, who owns the Birdcage, and Boot Hill to make a DVD for him so he can sell there in his gift shop. And we spent, I think it was 4 hours or 6 hours in there, and we had some incredible experiences, not only in the Birdcage, but just walking down Allen Street, which is the main street in Tombstone, just there on the street, even though there were lights on, people moving about, you know, that type of thing. And at midnight, it was just amazing. And that was one of the best. The Buford House Bed and Breakfast, it used to be a bed and breakfast. I understand it's a personal residence now. The Buford House was nicely haunted then, too. That had a nice history behind it. It's just amazing what you can pick up. Like I said, just walking down the street, it was just, you know, just great stuff. That had to be my first and my best. And then from there, we've gone to, where have we gone? We've gone to the Noyal Lodge, which is in Fort Bragg, California. And it's a beautiful little fishing village, and this bed and breakfast is really beautiful, really nice place, small place. Nicely haunted, has a little history to it where, you know, lovers were separated because one got in a car accident while coming back to get to the woman, and she pines for him all the time, but you hear little kids run up and down the stairs, run all the way through the building and that type of thing. Where else have we gone? Alcatraz was not what I expected. There wasn't a whole lot there. The Hornet, the same thing. There wasn't a whole lot there, interestingly. But there's a whole lot of other places that are undocumented. We're currently doing work that we've been doing for a year and a half at Preston Castle, which is in Ione, California, and very, very nicely haunted. Lots of EVP. That's where we did Ghost Adventures. There's just so many places that are undocumented, and I love it because people are starting to come forward and say, you know, I think I have this place. I'd like for you to check out, and you find that it's really nicely haunted. It makes for a good day. Been to the Castle Air Museum, which is in Atwater, California. Found really nice evidence in a haunted B-29 called Raven Hell. What else? I mean, I could go on and on. I could go on and on and on.
I'm just sitting here writing all this down, going, "Wow, I got to hit that! Wow, I got to hit that!"
So there's just so many places. We try to do the undocumented places, but also places that people are able to get into, because I think that that's very important, as opposed to people trespassing, like we did when we were, you know, a lot younger, in the cemeteries and things. If we go to a place that we can say, hey, we went here, this is what happened there, and you can go there too, at least people will go, people are interested, they want to see, they want to hear, and they want to experience. And that's one of the things that I find that is very important for us as ghost hunters, to educate everybody else and let them know, hey, it's okay to go here. You don't have it, you know, don't have to worry about that. Tombstone is a town. Anybody can go there. The Birdcage Theater is always open. Boot Hill is always open. But there's other places around, too. The George Cheslin Monument, we caught a lot of voices out there, and it's way out, in, you know, kind of in the boonies type of thing. But it's a monument to the man who actually built Tombstone. And there's a couple of other places. There's the other old cemetery there. That is just a wild place at nighttime. I mean, not only are there animals out there, which was just really something, you know, something to behold, but there's just so many things going on out there, you know, that we can't explain, and we don't know what it is, but during the day it looks nice and quiet and peaceful and everything else. So,
and at night
it's hopping.
What
do we try to do to help?
That sounds a lot like what we're finding. You know, I started this little group of mine, GRI, and we started hitting all these spots where we kind of decided to hit the spots where people weren't hitting. And it's the same sorts of things. We're finding haunts just about everywhere we go. And we tried the, as a matter of fact, we tried the technique, you know, Kat and myself in February, just going down the street and seeing what we could get, basically trolling for EVPs. And sure enough, we got a bunch and got a great investigation out of one of those, and we're set for a couple of more. So, boy, I'll tell you, it's just surprising to me. You know, Placerville and up here and out into Coloma is just chock-a-block full of sites that, you know, I've gotten some amazing EVPs out of these places. But let me look at here. You've written a number of books, and also I see the videos here in the bio. You have the Ghost of Tombstone, and I also see Virginia City, and we were just there. can you talk about Virginia City?
Well, Virginia City was fun. I mean, that was just a great fun. The town is fun anyway, but we, again, did a documentary there because we felt that we needed to do it. We do one every, like, year and a half, 2 years. And Virginia City has a lot of very nice haunts. They have the regular stuff that's on the regular street. But if you go down the road just a bit and you come to the Gold Hill Hotel, not to be confused with the Gold Field, which is in Nevada, further down by Las Vegas, but the Gold Hill Hotel, the hotel itself is built right in front of the Yellow Jacket Mine. The Yellow Jacket Mine has a history where I think 30 or 34 or 35 or something like that people, firemen and miners, were killed right there in the mine trying to get out. And the legend or the urban legend says that every so often, just when things are right, that you'll see them walking out of the mine, you know, trying to get home. Well, we stayed in the Miner's Lodge, which is just behind the actual hotel. And it's like two apartments put together. You can do one or do the other, but they're two separate apartments, and they meet in the middle. The noises that you hear in there, like people shuffling papers, lots of walking around, people talking to each other from one of those apartments to the next, and you're just laying there in your bed going, wow, this is amazing, you know. And then,
actually, I hate to break it to you, we were just there.
Were you in the Miner's Lodge?
Oh, yeah.
It great? It's a great place. It's just wonderful. But a lot of people don't know that.
Oh,
my
God.
A lot of people do not know that it is as haunted as it is. Now, the one thing I can say is that a lot of people go into the hotel, and there's the older part, which is the haunted part, and then there's the newer part. The older part has no amenities, no TV, no phone, no nothing, and it's just a room and a bathroom. But there's two rooms. One is room four, which is, I think it's four, which is Rosie's room, and five, which is William's room. Two of the kids that were there, two of the children, and they named the rooms after them. Rosie's room is not quite so haunted, or at least it wasn't haunted when we were there. But William's room, which is what you would see on the documentary that we made, we had one of our members who was staying in that room because he wanted to stay in a haunted room. He wanted to have an experience, and he wanted to stay in a haunted room. So he was very, very nervous. He was, you know, just didn't quite know what to do. So he slept on top of the bed with his clothes on and the lights on. And about 2, maybe 2:30 in the morning, it was like somebody had kicked his bed. And he just kind of sat there and said, well, maybe it's just people walking around. And then his bed, you know, got kicked again, a little bit moving. He goes, okay, well, I can do that. And then he heard, like, scratching at the door and walking just in front of his doorway. And then his bed really, really started to shake, like somebody had, you know, was just shaking it back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. The guy gets up, he runs downstairs, the bar is closing, and he's asking for another room, and he's going, I can't give you another room, I don't even have access to any of that stuff, I'm just the bartender. So he comes running back up, and a friend and I were in adjoining rooms, and he comes running up to her side, her bedroom, you know, banging on the door, and she comes to the middle where the door is that's adjoining us, and she's opening the door, and she's going, Gloria, I'm going, yeah, you know, and I'm half asleep, and she goes, can you come into my room? And I'm going, why? I said, it's late. And she goes, because Steve is here, and he wants to talk to us. I said, can't you just do it, and, you know, I'll see him in the morning. She goes, he's got issues. And so we went walking back with him. He did not want to go back to that room, and he didn't know how he was going to get his stuff or anything else. We went walking back to that room, and of course there was nothing there. We set up a camera. I think we set up a couple of cameras inside the room, and he was just fit to be tied, and he just didn't know where he was going to stay or what. And they had offered for him to sleep on the floor of his room, and I said, you know what, I've got a room that has 2 beds. Why don't you come over here until we can figure something out? And so he stayed in the bed, you know, next to me, and I'm just kind of laughing at myself. Boy, God, see, you asked for it.
No,
oh,
I mean, if you're going to sleep in a haunted room and stuff happens, I think that's what you want.
It was just such good fun. We just had such a laugh at his expense.
Well, I'll tell you it's an amazingly haunted place. Our experiences there were mirrored a lot of what you're talking about. When we went in, we had noises in the roof of the miner's cabin. We heard. I stayed in the right hand room, kind of the larger bedroom, and by myself, and set up a video camera, and then went to sleep. And I woke up, and I heard kind of knocking noises right above me. And I've been slept in many haunted rooms, so I thought if that's the best they can do, you know, I'm going back to sleep. But we did get a lot of EVPs. We did some work that night, did some EVPs in the kind of in the kitchen area there. And also we brought some whiskey for them. We brought them some whiskey out at the entrance to the mine and toasted them and left some for them. And I put some drop recorders out there. But what was amazing was I actually witnessed an apparition exit the mine, and I saw half of an apparition. I saw the legs running right out of the mine, and it ran right around the miner's cabin and disappeared, and I did a double take. And usually I see things out of the corner of my eye, but that was like, you know, one of the 3 times I've seen seen this. But the amazing part was 10 minutes later, 2 of our investigators came to me and said, John, something happened. And I went, what? And they took me to the spot, and it was right where this had happened. 10 minutes later, there were blue orbs that were witnessed by 2 team members going over the same exact pathway. And so
that's amazing.
There was a lot going on. And then myself and one other investigator, that other mine that's further down from the miner's cabin, if you look down on the same plateau, and there's that kind of big giant mine. You know the one I'm talking about? It's on the stilts.
Yeah,
and
the one that has the big I don't know what they call that thing, the big machine there in the back at the side of the hill. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it's on the side of the hill there. We went out at night, and 3 of us were standing there, and one investigator turned away and was looking at something else, and me and this other person were looking up, and we watched a white glowing form float right through the window up there on that metal building, and it just passed very slow, very deliberate, like it didn't even care we were looking. And so
that's nice.
We came out of that place is haunted. No doubt. So, you know, we're getting ready to finalize our report and put all that up. So and we're going to go back in September and do a reveal for them. But let me tell you what, we agree with you. Gold Hill is haunted.
It's one of the best places in town.
Yeah. Now, there are no ghosts in Santa Clara. That's an interesting name for a book. Well, let's talk about some of your books. I'm not even going to do the break because this is such a great interview. So let's just go straight through. There are no ghosts in Santa Clara. Let's talk about that.
Well, basically, I kind of did that. It wasn't done as a joke per se, but I kind of did it as a joke, if you will. I went to the City Historical Society. And then they directed me to the historical liaison for the city because I wanted to assist with some of their historical buildings and that type of thing. And I brought up the paranormal. And I said, you know, this is what I've done for, you know, quite a few years. And, you know, I'd like to see if maybe I can help in any of your buildings, you know, just being a docent or whatever. And the lady looked at me. She said, well, there are no ghosts in Santa Clara. And I said, really? Really? So what I did was, I'm just such a, you know, a mean person, that I put an ad in the local paper, and I said that I was a research student, and I was looking to do research on paranormal stories in Santa Clara. If anybody had a story, they could phone me or email me or fax me or text me or whatever they needed to do to get the story to me. And that's when I got into a fight with my post lady, actually, because she got really upset for, I don't know, it was roughly 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks. I was getting an overabundance of mail from a lot of people in Santa Clara that had stories to tell, and they were all paranormal stories and all this stuff. So I said, you know what, I'm going to take all of these stories that these people were nice enough to send me and put them into a book. So I scanned them into, you know, into pages just exactly the way that they wrote them to me, and made the book, and I explained, you know, this is all stories about people from Santa Clara that had experiences, and so therefore that must mean that there are ghosts in Santa Clara, and that's what I did. So now the people in Santa Clara, you know, the historical liaison still doesn't talk to me.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, does she believe now?
No, that's, you know, just the way it is when you're talking about, you know, people that are set in their ways, and that's okay. She's, you know, she's due her own opinion and that type of thing, but I just thought it was very comical that she would even say that without even hearing me out, you know, so I just kind of got back at her a little bit.
I got the same problem, and it's called my father. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's...
Never had a problem
he's
with my dad.
You never had a problem with your parents?
I never had a problem with my dad. My mom is always, you know, oh, you're going to go do that ghost thing, are you? So.
Oh, you got the opposite. Okay. Yeah, well, my father's had a stroke, and but he's he always worries that, because I'm a computer scientist for an aerospace company, and he always worries that, you know, he'll tell me when he's having a really good day talking, he'll go, you know, you could ruin your career doing this. And I'm like, Dad, I'm 50 years old. If they're gonna stick it to me, they're gonna do it. You know, but I don't know. I just think it's something. You know, this is a passion, and I can see that. That's what you've got with this. It's a passion that when you get into it, it just becomes your life. And
yes,
it sounds to me like you've actually found a great way to make it really pay for you. You know, you're actually out there doing things, and it is your business. So I'm, you know, my hat's off to you. You're the model I want to follow.
Well, in 2002, I was able to quit my job. I used to be an emergency room nurse, very grounded person, but I was well aware of what, you know, death does and what people do to each other and that type of thing. And it just seemed to kind of click. I was always interested in this as I was growing up. I did have a few experiences, which I didn't know then, but I do know now, you know, were something I should have paid attention to, and I didn't. But definitely, I quit my job, and now this is my full-time job, and it is a full-time job, you know, because if you want to lead your group and lead them the right way, then this is kind of what you have to do. You know, it has to be your full-time thing, and you have to know what direction and you want to take people in and, you know, and guide them, because it's tough out there. When I first started doing this, it's not as bad as it is now. You know, we've paved the way for other people to be able to come through and do this and do it without having to be, I don't know what's the word, ashamed, scared, you know, any of those words. Saying this is what, the stigma of, you know, this is what I do. In my day, in those days, I mean, it was awful. I may as well have been burned at the stake, you know. I mean, it was not a good thing. So, you know, you just kind of say, okay, and just keep running around.
Well, so did you have, when you first started, though, I take it you had an acceptance that this stuff was out there prior to that. Did you ever have, you know, personal paranormal experiences before you got into all of this?
Like I said, when I was younger, I did not know that they were paranormal experiences. But as I look back at them now, I'm going, wow, that's what it was. You know, I did have a couple. One of them where my sister and my father, all three of us at the same time, had seen my grandfather, who had died, I don't know, somewhere between a few days to a week beforehand. And it was more than comical, because my father was sleeping on the couch in the rumpus room, having had a tiff with my mother. And my sister always slept in my bed, because she was just one of those people that was, you know, habitually nervous. And she started to push me out of the bed, saying, look, there's grandpa, go get dad. And I'm going, I don't want to go through that door. He's standing right there, you know. And she's still pushing me. Finally, you know, he kind of just put his hands out like he was trying to, you know, put his hands in front of him like he was just, you know, trying to reach out or whatever, both hands. And then he kind of disappeared. But he was in the same clothes he always wore. He was not in the clothes that he was buried in, which is very interesting. He did have his hat on. He had his pocket watch on. He had his vest on and his pants and his shirt. But those were not what he was buried in. He was buried in a suit. And he disappeared, and that's when I went to go into the rumpus room, and I said, you know, Dad, you better come and see Teresa. She's, you know, over here having a cow. And he goes, what's wrong? And I said, well, she just saw Grandpa. I said, we just saw Grandpa. You better come over there and talk to her. And he goes, it's okay. He says, you just need to tell her it's okay. You know, tell her to say a few prayers. I just saw him myself. So I'm going, oh, okay. You know, my dad was always like that. He was always, you know, just really calm about things. And he was going, it's okay. Because he used to have a lot of, you know, paranormal experiences when he was younger, living around my grandmother and his siblings. And he always wanted to tell me the story so that I could write a book, but we never got that opportunity because he passed away. But it just, you know, it's just one of those things. He was very accepting. My mother was not. And we would always kind of, you know, talk about things and, you know, say, wow. But that was one of two episodes or experiences that were very clear. The other one was just, you know, I very briefly, we were in Winters where my uncle was, and he was very ill. He was probably dying, and I didn't know it. I was just a kid. I don't know, 10, 11, 12, something like that. And we were asleep in the car because everybody else was in this little tiny hospital. It was just a, you know, with just a few beds and no, you know, nothing but a lobby and a reception type area, and that's it. It wasn't anything, you know, big like now. And my dad came out in the morning and said, why don't you come in now? It's cold out here. You know, get dressed and come in, because we were in our pajamas. So I got dressed first, and I was just kind of waiting for my sister, of course, who had to take forever. And as I was sitting there with one foot out the door and just kind of sitting there, it was like something popped on my knee. I don't know what it was. I always call it, I don't know, electricity or a fairy or I don't know what it was. But at that point, I knew my uncle had passed away. And when my sister went in and I went into the little hospital, everybody was crying because my uncle had passed away. So I'm kind of going, okay, you know, that makes sense. I didn't think anything of it then, But as I started to do this more and more and more, and I figured out how things work, I'm kind of going, ah, that's what that was. And the light bulb went off. I'm going, okay, I get it now. You know, and those were kind of the experiences, other than my father telling us all of the stories he had as he was growing up and, you know, becoming a working man and in the Army and that type of thing, that led me into this more and more and more. So, yeah, that's how it all began.
Yeah, that sounds similar to, you know, my own. I grew up in a very accepting family to paranormal activity, and it was my mother's side that were all, you know, Scottish Highlanders, and all of them had a little extra something, you know, with them, and everybody had their gifts. And when I started having my own experiences, nobody had a problem with it. It was just always an open topic in the house. You know, we didn't talk about it outside. You know, people back then thought you were a little off if you were bringing that stuff up. But I'll never forget, though, when I was 17 years old, I was a little bit out of control as a young man, and my folks decided that the way to get rein me in was to put me out 80 miles away in our second summer home to clear the brush from the property for 3 months and pay me. Didn't reveal to me that the house that I was staying in was haunted, so I ended up my first nights there having basically residual ghost activity happening with parties playing themselves.
Wow.
Every night. And I was then I found out about the intelligent quant that was also there when someone got in bed with me. And that's when I had a terrified phone call at 3 a.m. going, "You got to get me out of this place." And it sorted itself out, but I came back a lot more humbled that there were some unknown things that I didn't know, and I was a lot more controllable after that. So, you know, the paranormal can be good for you. You can scare the hell out of your kids, those of you who have children out of control. Use the paranormal to your benefit. Anyway, sorry, this is your interview and I'm telling my stories, but
no,
you've got a bunch of stuff going on here. Number one, I'm just going to read real quick from the bio here. You have a certificate in parapsychology. You're ordained as a minister, yeah, and certificate in the use of thermal photography. Certificate as an EVP specialist. Boy, I'm about to get one of those. Certificate as a Reiki master. A certificate in paranormal investigation, and a certificate in ghost hunting. So you've got all of this experience. And then on top of that, you're doing all this work with the Ghost Trackers programs. So you know, I'm looking at the whole list here, the yearly California Ghost Hunters Conference, the Ghost Hunters Campout, Adopt a Highway program, and so on. So maybe you could talk towards the programs that your group is doing and, you know, where you're going and what your plans are for the future.
Okay. We do hold a yearly conference. Last year was the 7th year, so upcoming, of course, is the 8th year. We're looking for another really wonderful place that we can take everybody. Last year we took them up to Preston Castle and had a great time there. We do that every year. Our campouts are things that we do to try to get people together. It's like seminars and everything else. It's just trying to get people together and to dialogue with each other, to actually open up and say, you know, to tell people it's okay to, you know, be a ghost hunter. It's okay to be a paranormal researcher or investigator, whatever you want to call yourself. It's okay to do it. Come and talk to other people that have the same type of interest and that type of thing. We also, as far as programs, we are actually the, if you will, tour guide. For Preston Castle, where we go once a month and have a group of people that have registered and signed up through the Preston Castle website, and let them spend the night in there, you know, give them some dinner, let them spend the night in there and get do their own investigating, and, you know, we'll help them learn or you know, teach, give them a few of our techniques or that type of thing. Every year we work with the Joseph D. Grant Ranch House, which is in the East San Jose foothills, and hold a tour at Halloween, which is the 10th and the 11th, the 9th and 10th, whatever it is, whatever that weekend is. This year, it's free of charge, and we take them through that house, and every year we have something wonderful happen in there. Last tour last year, the door closed right in front of everybody. Everybody was watching, and the door just closed slowly all by itself. It was great. It was wonderful. Everybody was so excited. But everybody, you know, it seems like all the women get their hair stroked. The men get a, you know, little tap or something on the shoulder. Everybody hears noises. It's a great place. And it's a free tour. You have to call up and make reservations. But we do that. We've been doing that for, I think, 6 or 7 years now. We're going to start with another city. We recently did our last documentary, which was Ghosts of Pleasanton, but we did that kind of on a whim because we were asked to come into Pleasanton. They have a ghost walk every year that is very popular, and they tell all the haunted stories that go on in downtown Pleasanton. And they asked us to come in and spend a weekend and go through a couple of their places so that we could give a talk before the ghost walk. Well, what ended up happening was we ended up finding a lot of EVP and a lot of activity in these few places, and then everybody heard about it, and everybody wanted us to come and check out their building. So what turned out to be one weekend ended up being 4 weekends and about 12 places, and so we just made a documentary for them to be able to sell in their museum, and they've just been happy as clams ever since. But there's a lot of things that we do. We're looking forward to working with another city and helping them put together a ghost walk to kind of increase, you know, tourism or increase their people coming through there, and people get to go through and see their haunted stuff, which is always fine by me. So those are just a few of the programs we're working on.
Wow. And you're... you've got a lot going on.
Yeah, there's a lot.
But, you know, considering it's a full-time job, I can see that just based on everything I'm looking at here. And you even have an Adopt-a-Highway program, so you guys get out there and do your part for the environment, too.
Yes. We have actually 3 miles that we do, one side of 85, the other side of 85, Highway 85 in the South Bay area. And then further down on 85 by Almaden is another 1 mile that we do. But we take various, you know, times to do them. And nice people, we try to help and do our part and that type of thing. We also do some cemetery preservation, actually not in the city of Santa Clara. We do it in a couple of cemeteries in Sunnyvale and one in Los Gatos, where we've been working with them to show them how to best fix their fallen tombstones that have fallen over or that have cracked or that type of thing. We show them how to repair them and rebuild them and that type of thing. Santa Clara and I just don't have a great past, so everybody else
That's
wants
really
to work
cool.
with us, not them.
That's amazing with the tombstone thing, because we run into a lot of that up here. We have tombstones that are just on all these pioneer cemeteries are just wiped out, and I always feel terrible, especially the ones that the name is just gone, and you know, I try to do EVP with them and try to get them to tell me their names. I've been lucky a couple of times to get a first name out of them, but boy, I'd like to learn more about that, because El Dorado County could sure use them.
Well, there's a lot of websites out there that will actually give you instructions on how to do it. Save a Grave is one of them. It's a .org. And they give you instructions right there on the thing and, you know, tell you how to do it. There's a few that you can join and be a part of if you wanted to. But you have to find cemeteries that will let you do that and let you work in there. And once you do that, then you can, you know, take one at a time. It's just a matter of cement or whatever plaster you want to use. And, you know, it's very simple. It's just somebody's got to take the time to do it. And if we don't preserve our past, nobody's going to preserve our past, and we will have no past. So it's one of those things that, you know, is very important to me.
Well, yeah, and you know what? I just wrote that all down, because I'm going to take that up. There's definitely some places we're going to hit on that. I'm just glad to find out, you know, find out all this from you. let's look at where you're going with what other programs are coming up. You've got all these other Ghost Trackers programs. Are there anything else that's in the works that we should be looking for?
Such as things that we're doing?
Yeah, things that Ghost Trackers is up to.
Well, again, we're getting ready to put together our yearly conference that will be taking place next. It's either late April or early May. It's right in there all the time. We have this little town that we might be able to have the whole town to ourselves and be able to investigate in. That's if we are able to get permission. This gentleman owns the whole town, and it's pretty much an abandoned town, so we're working on that. Again, like I said, we're working on putting together a ghost walk for an East Bay city. They're very interested in allowing us to help them do that. So we're getting ready to work with them, and we've done a few presentations and things like that. We're going to be in and around the city of Turlock, again, filming at the Castle Air Museum and a couple of other places over there with a local television station that wants to do a Halloween segment. So we have to do it early so that they can put it together and that type of thing. That's coming up in the next couple of weeks here.
Okay, Castle Air Museum. I've been there, and I have some psychic ability. And when I was in there, I felt something not quite right about the place. And I haven't been there in about 2-3 years. But wow! So you guys are going to hit that, and you're actually going to film in there and do some EVP and investigation here.
Well, we did that back in, I believe it was 2004, Channel 30, KSCE, whatever it is, allowed us to do a Halloween segment then. And again, remember, we were very new at this, and we were able to get up into the cockpit of Raisin Hill, that's the name of the haunted B-29, and they named their ghost Arthur. And we believe we actually made contact with Arthur by using a tri-field EMF detector and a Geiger counter. We were actually able to catch on video the fact that we asked Arthur to increase the number of hits that the Geiger counter was getting, and it would do that, and then to lower it down so that we knew we were actually talking to him, and he did that, and we did that 2 or 3 times. And it was very, very interesting stuff because there's nothing electrical in those airplanes. They totally gut it out. You know, all you're able to see is just the nice outside. And when we were in there, we were actually able to talk to what we believe was talk to him and get him to do those things on request. And that was one of the more exciting things going on. And we just had a really great time doing that because I really, really did not think that we would get any kind of activity in an airplane like that. And lo and behold, it called me a liar.
Wow. Well, I'm definitely going to pay attention to what you guys are up to with that because, you know, the personal experiences there. I was with somebody from my security organization, invited me out there, and we were just doing photography. And as I walked around there, I just kind of got the, that unnerving feeling you're being watched, and you'd look around and there'd be nobody there. Now I know why, so I'm going to go back there to take my team. That's not a far drive for us. You say every month you do Preston Castle, right?
Yes, we are the, I guess, docents or tour guides or whatever you want to call it at Preston Castle.
I'll tell you what, I am going to tonight make a point of going out. I'll look on your website, and I'm going to join you for one of those. I want to hunt with you again. So hopefully there's a spot open in one of the upcoming next month or two, and I'd definitely love to hunt with you if you're up for a GRI member dropping in on you.
I don't think I would have a problem with that. You're more than welcome to join me.
Okay, well, I want to get out there and look for the information. Hey, we're on the last couple of minutes here. And so why don't we talk about maybe give you a plug for your websites and anything else that's coming up. What's your website so folks can get to that?
Our website is www.ghost-trackers.org.
Okay. And that's got all the things that you're doing in your group's future activities and EVPs and all the stuff. We didn't get to play any EVPs this time, but You know what, I'll play, I've got them loaded, and if I can talk you into coming back in the next few weeks, maybe we can play some of your EVPs.
Oh, sure.
Okay, I'll tell you what, we'll work that out and come back and maybe play some of your evidence and go through some of that. So we've got that all loaded up, but it's been really one of the better interviews we've ever had on the show, so I wanted to thank you very much for being on with us and taking time out of your busy schedule.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate your asking me to be on.
Okay, thank you very much, and God bless. And Gloria Young of Ghost Trackers, have a good evening.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye-bye now.
Okay, Ghost Hunters, or Ghost Trackers, they are a top-notch group, and we were very lucky to get them aboard with us. And we got a little crosstalk going on, so if some of you are hearing some things going on, we plowed through that, and it's something going on with our friends at Blog Talk, so I don't know what is causing that. But anyway, we're going to go ahead and wind it down. Let's talk about who's going to be on next week. We're going to have Todd Wolf of the Wolf Manor. He's going to be on with us next Friday night. We're not going to have a Saturday show. It'll be Friday night at 8 o'clock, I believe. And we've already got that all scoped out on the show page. So if the time's a little different, we'll see it. But we're going to have him on and talk about the many, many ghosts of Wolf Manor. I've hunted there myself, and it's just an amazingly haunted place. So we might even play a little bit of my evidence that I picked up, and Todd will have probably some things that he's got going on. He runs a weekly live broadcast. It's actually going on right now as we speak from that place, and they have got a top-notch broadcast setup. And so these guys are the real deal. They're the best of the best as far as I'm concerned with the live broadcast stuff going on. So we're looking forward to having him on. And Kat, why don't we do a shout-out, make sure we get everybody covered who's joined us tonight.
It's Bella Rose, guest, Infinite Love, Kalina Moon, Miss T, Tahoe Girl, and Brian just left.
Okay, well, thank you to everybody for being here for this show. And with that, we're going to go ahead and do some sign-off music. And then we'll probably run a little bit over, Kat and I always do, and then and when you catch the archive show, there'll be a few extras in there. It'll make you laugh.
Right.
So we'll do that. So we're going to go ahead and do a little Bigfoot Boogie, just because Kat likes that. And that'll sign us off, and here we go, Bigfoot Boogie.
Ghost Country Music by GRI. I'm the smallest, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side of his knee, and he was talking to Moxie and Joe. Better party they gon' have out in the St. John's walls. Sasquatch doing a brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp. He's running his gun. Stan the Snake, he's playing the bass. And he's beat partying all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
He's a rap beat, a rotten his bow. And he's a beat jamming with Marcus and Joe. A Sasquatch doing a brand new dance. The Bigfoot Boogie in the Parallel Land. Do the Bigfoot Boogie. Sasquatch dancing around it to the Bigfoot Boogie in the Paraloo ground. Get it, boy.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Thank you.
I woke up last night to a terrible sound with a whole lot of noise, something shaking the ground.
Yeah,
crept in the swamp where they were getting down to the Bigfoot Boogie in the ground. Do the Bigfoot Boogie. Oh, yeah, the Bigfoot Boogie. Doing the Bigfoot Boogie in the St. John's walls. It is a lizard, be a beating the drums. Yeah, Marcus and Georgie's running his gun. Stan the Snake, he's
she's a play in the face. I hear a feet parting all over the place. Yeah, ho, get around, feet are rotten and foe. I need a feet jamming with Marcus and Joe. Sasquatch doing a brand new dance. They call Bigfoot Boogie in the fair. We land you the Bigfoot Boogie.
You know, Kat, I was just thinking, you've got a lot of environmentalists up there in Washington State, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
You got a spotted owl problem you want to talk about?
No, that was a long time ago, and it was ridiculous as hell.
Well, things have not changed too much, but got a little something we want to play for you regarding the environmentalists and spotted owls. So I dug this up, and I thought you'd get a kick out of it. So let's play this. We're on the archive show and have a little fun after the fact, so the downloaders are going to like this. Here we go.
I got a little chainsaw in my pickup and I love to hear it sing. Gonna hit up the old growth, baby. Harvest some trees, but each time I try, I catch same old grief. Don't do no cutting, no clearing. You'll make all the critters leave.
That's
well,
right.
What will they do when they run out of paper towels? Well, we can wipe their butts with a spotted owl.
Oh my God. Oh no. I got a little something for you that I was thinking about how hot it was up there in Seattle, Cat.
It was.
It was. Has it cooled down a bit?
Yes, it has.
Well, I got a little Christmas music for you. Something to kind of remind you that it could be cool, but at the same time, something that's kind of a whack thing that would fit, kind of fit the way this show goes at the end of our usual extravaganza. So why don't we play this for you? It's all about roasting chipmunks over an open flame. Here we go.
Chipmunks roasting on an open fire.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Hot sauce dripping from their toes. Yuletide squirrels, fresh filleted by the choir. They poked hot skewers through their nose. Everybody knows. Some pepper and a garlic clove help to make them seasoned right. Tiny rats with a crisp golden coat will really hit the spot tonight. And now when Santa sees his train, there'll be some homemade chipmunk jerky for his sleigh.
Hey, look at that!
And every hungry child is gonna spy. And so I'm bright.
crushing on some honey glaze to keep them crisp and juicy too. Let's hope they get served many times, many ways. Tasty chipmunks. Good food.
That ain't right. On that, Mr. Cole?
Oh, yes, sir, Mr. Sevilla.
Would you mind handing me the barbecue sauce? I am starved.
Oh, no problem, Dave. And listen, you best be having two of them drumsticks because they're all so tatty and there ain't much meat upon them.
Put a sock in it, Melvin. You know, for years people said you overrated hamsters were my meal ticket. Now I guess you could just say, you're my meal.
That's a good one, Dave. I always knew you was the funny one in the group.
Damn straight.
And so I'm offering some recipes. From chipmunk pie to chipmunk stew. I'm not really sad that it ended this way. Furry chipmunks, screw you.
Did you hear that, Melvin? Melvin? Melvin!
Well, I'm sorry, Dave. Did you want Melvin? There's plenty of Legador left, though.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, God. I had to put you through some whack stuff here, but hey.
It's okay.
Okay. Well, we're just hoping it's cooler. You sound like you're a little bit down tonight, so I was just trying to make you laugh.
No, I don't want to interrupt your interviews. I just it was weird to hear. Say, who's that? Oh, well, it's just me. I'm just.
Well,
a cat.
I'm sorry. I mean, cat, you can always jump in. There's never a problem with that. Just grab a question and you know, do what you do, because that's always appreciated.
I'm good.
Okay. Well, anyway, we'll go ahead and call it a night. And again, for those folks listening in on the broadcast, we're going to be having Todd Wolf from the Wolf Manor is going to be in, and we'll have him aboard for Friday at 8 o'clock. I've confirmed that. That's going to be August 7th, 2009, 8 o'clock p.m. Pacific, and we'll be very fortunate to have that gentleman aboard. And so this is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio signing off once again, and we will talk with you later, Mr. Cat.
That's right.
Take care.
All right, you too.
Good night.
Good night.